Welcome to the Agency Profit Podcast, a show dedicated to going deep space on agency operations, which is just as nerdy as it sounds. I'm your host, Marcel Petipoff. I'm the CEO of Parakeeto, a firm that helps digital and creative agencies measure and improve their profitability. Join me as I interview some of the smartest thought leaders and agency owners in our space and go deep into operations, metrics, and all the other things you need to get right so you can spend less time worrying about operations and more time executing on your vision. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Agency Profit Podcast. Today, I'm joined by a friend of the show. He is a multi-agency owner and a coach that helps agency owners acquire and retain clients using recurring revenue. I was honored to do an interview on his show a few months back, and now he's here on the Agency Profit Podcast. So with all that, Pete Everett, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's great to be back here. Sorry to say, it's nearly been like 7 months since we recorded that other show. I know it seems that's just insane, but man, yeah. Seven months. How was Christmas? How was New Year? How's the family?
You know, everything was great. Yeah, it's amazing how fast time goes by, doesn't it, in this crazy industry of ours. But it's great to see you again, Pete. I appreciate you making some time to be here with us. I've given everyone a little context on what you do, but I would love for you to, in your own words, describe who you serve and what you do.
Sure thing. So you're dead right. I essentially do three things, which makes it sound like my time is split kind of like insanely all over the place, but actually it really works quite well. So I'm an agency owner here in the UK. I've been running my agency since around about 2016, but I was working in agencies and whatever before that. And I know we're going to touch on some of my background a bit later in the show. And through that, I then launched a white label SEO service called SEO Hive. We launched on the 1st of April 2020, just as a global pandemic was starting. So that was interesting and maybe another story in itself. And then I've been coaching. I have a small number of coaching clients. I'm not one of these coaches that has massive programs or loads of courses or anything like that. I have a small number of private coaching clients that are agency owners who are trying to build themselves to the next level through offering levels of recurring service. So that's essentially what I do.
Very cool. And also very cool that you're in the trenches running two firms of your own or a partner in two firms of your own and are also, you know, creating a little bit of space to help other agency owners. And there's not a lot of folks that are doing both at the same time and really have that context of being in the day-to-day just like their clients. So I find that pretty neat.
Cool. Yeah. It really is a, I mean, you know, I don't find it sort of a, let me put it this way. It's not something I intentionally kind of set out to do in terms of kind of run all these things concurrently. Life happens and opportunities present themselves and I do have certain reasons for setting things up in certain ways, but actually, you know, we're in an ever evolving industry. And I think it's really important that those people that are offering advice to, to others do keep up to date with what's going on, actually, essentially have their own skin in the game. And that's something that I know that a number of my clients, my coachees, see as valuable, that they can talk to me because I am going through the same stuff that they're going through at the same time that they're going through it.
And you bring a lot of experience as well, having worked in agency prior to starting your own. Tell us a little bit more about, what your trajectory has been and what led you to eventually starting your own firm.
Cool. So I started working in agencies when I left university, which was in 2004. So that kind of, it's actually 20 years this year. Wow. So I've got double decades going on here. No, in all seriousness, the first agencies that I started working in were award-winning brand agencies based in the print world. The very first agency that I worked for, their specialism was in university prospectuses, and they won like massive awards for university prospectuses, places that, you know, even global audiences would have heard of, like Cambridge University, Oxford University, Sheffield University, places like that. And the very much the ethos in those agencies was that the client is king. You know, when we won an account, it was the account was worth multiples of six figures. And with that came everything from, of course, a fantastic design job and the deliverables that the client expected, but also this element of service where nothing was a problem. And, you know, you need us, we'll be there. All of that kind of stuff. And that kind of got ingrained in me a little bit. Now, I was a lowly web developer. That was my background. I started by building microsites and landing pages for people to order university prospectuses. That was essentially my job. And but slowly but surely got more and more ingrained into the into agency life. And, you know, I'm sure we're agency owners. We all know this. The certain people work at agencies are fantastic at what they do, but you can't put them in front of a client. And there's other people that work at agencies that are just as fantastic as what they do, but you can put them into a client, in front of a client. And I fell into that sort of second bracket. So ended up in working through management and then went freelance for a while, then got headhunted for a role at a large e-commerce place outside London, and worked there for a few years before starting my own agency in 2016, as I said. So that's kind of the trajectory that I went on to get to where I am today.
And so what was the motivation for you to finally decide, hey, I'm going to stop, you know, working at jobs and start my own thing?
That's an interesting discussion. The straw that broke the camel's back was this. I went into work one day and I'd been trying to get hold of our managing director, our MD. We had this huge account that we were working on. There was a big project, was supposed to be going live. I don't know. Something I needed him on. And his wife used to work with us in our payroll department, and I couldn't find him anywhere. So I went up to payroll and said to Sam, hey, do you know where Matt is? And she just looked at me and said, he's on another golf day. And literally, this was like his third golf day in the week. And I my face must have said it all. And I literally just said, what, again? And she looked at me and said, well, when you own the place, you can do what you like. And then the penny dropped. So it was a bit more than that, to be fair. But that was, as I say, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I 3 weeks after that, I handed my notice in. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I was out the door. But that was, I'd completely forgotten about that story. But that was where it came from. I had essentially, you know, I knew the value that I could add to clients. I was in a particular job that was only playing to certain parts of my strengths, and I wanted a bit more autonomy over what I was doing and how I was doing it and who I was doing it for. And my agency is called SO, S-O. My business partner in the agency is a guy called Steve Osborne. So he was a guy that I worked with at the very first agency, that brand agency that I was talking about with the prospectuses. And, you know, we met for a drink. He'd married somebody, moved to a different part of the country. He was up seeing his mum. I happened to bump into him. We had this kind of chance meeting. And he was a brand consultant who had no kind of delivery, tactical digital delivery at all. And he was starting to struggle because he was losing work because of that. I had a whole load of non-competes from this director's job that I literally just left. So we put two and two together and made four and carried the branding over. So that's where So Digital Communications, my agency, came from, was actually half birthed in some flailing branding clients that my business partner could bring with him.
Amazing. And so that was back in 2016. So at this point, you're almost split 50-50, about a decade, a little over a decade working in other large firms, and then almost a decade now out on your own as an agency owner. I'm curious what you've seen evolve over that time and what the major contrasts that you've seen are between how these big traditional firms that were operating in traditional media operated relative to these kind of new age digital firms that I think you and I spent a lot of time working with and that we've seen a huge proliferation of, especially over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there's been massively the rise of the solopreneur in the last I don't know how long, I don't want to put a time frame on it, but certainly in the last 8 years since I've been working, you know, you don't have to go very far to actually find that you are, or that clients are dealing with businesses from any size, from people that have 50 devs sat in a massive multi-story glass fronted office block somewhere, through to literally somebody that's operating out of a shed in the bottom of their garden, and you know, and everything in between. The thing that strikes me more than anything from the client perspective, and this is really the key point here. At the end of the day, running an agency, the only way that works is if you deal with clients. You know, they are the throughput that give us the projects, that give us the retainers, that give us the work to do. They're actually going to pay for our services or our time, depending on how you structure all of that, and actually make our businesses work. And one of the key things that did seem to happen, I'm going to say pre-COVID, was that there very much seemed to be a bit of a race to the bottom. Project budgets got squeezed. People expected massive amounts of work for potentially very little cash, and we kind of ended up in a bit of a free for all. I would say that was certainly my experience of a lot of the markets here in the UK, anyway. And actually, what's happened post-COVID, or because of COVID, is we've all had to focus down a lot more on what value means. And value doesn't necessarily mean cheap, but there has to be a correlation between the value that you offer a client and the amount that they are going to pay you over the lifetime value of that client. And you know, recurring revenue is absolutely brilliant. It takes out a lot of the guesswork with your feast or famine cycle of your business. Absolutely fine. That's what we all strive for. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a set number of deliverables, that you have to have a set value per client. That client can still, that, you know, you can still extract more from that client. You can still offer them more value, work your way up with them over a period of time. And actually, that process becomes easier the more you work with people. It's far, far easier to offer somebody more value 6 months after you've been working with them for 6 months than it is trying to do it all in the first discovery session on the first day, just to get a contract signed so that you can then add them to your recurring spreadsheet. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We were talking a little bit about the show, about this before the show, and you know, I think the general observation here is that large traditional agencies in the past, they would win an account, and the scope of work in terms of what they were going to do with that account was often very unclear out into the future. Initially, mm-hmm. there would often be a project or a scope of work and a plan for, you know, whatever it is, 3 months, 6 months, a year. But those accounts would stay with that agency sometimes for many, many years and spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in fees. But so much of what that traditional agency was doing was constantly having this kind of client relationship where they're looking down the line, understanding what's coming up for that business, being strategic and deciding what problems do we need to solve? What kind of services are you going to need? There was a lot of adaptability in those client relationships. And I think what you're speaking to is, especially for these smaller agencies in this new age of digital agency, we've been very bullish on the idea of standardization, productization, right? Making these very cookie cutter, repeatable businesses. And it's a stark contrast from this very different relationship that I think large brands have been used to having with traditional agencies, and this very kind of specific box that we try to set clients into in a lot of the more productized and service-based agencies that we're seeing today. And that, I think, is at the core of your thesis in terms of how one of these smaller emerging digital agencies that's trying to build recurring revenue can do that without ending up in this race to the bottom, as you say it, right? Where we're selling these very homogenous cookie cutter type of engagements that are focused on deliverables. But unless we're going out and finding those problems, are solving like one very specific problem. And it makes it kind of easy, I guess, when what you think you're paying for as a client is 5 posts on social media or this many backlinks per month or whatever the case might be, to start comparing that to other options and saying, well, I can get the same outcome for cheaper somewhere else.
Yeah. There was a business coach that I used to work with at the e-commerce agency, which I'll be honest, I still keep in touch with him. And a lot of the thinking, he was the guy that really got me onto into a level of coaching. That was kind of my first proper experience of coaching, if you like. And he used to talk quite a lot to us at the agency about working to position ourselves as the trusted advisor to a client. And once you got to a point where you became the trusted advisor, essentially, unless you had a car crash, that client almost would never look anywhere else, unless something catastrophic happened or something Herculean happened and their business priorities changed and made them readdress the whole assigning of things. By getting yourself to a position of being a trusted advisor, that was when you truly removed yourself from this tactical delivery. Yes, tactical delivery happens. It's always whirring around in the background. It's always how we're going to get stuff out there into the real world for the client. But that doesn't need to be the be-all and end-all of your business. And look, I'm not saying for 1 minute that we should scrap the productized model and go all the way back to being client is king. What I am saying, though, is that you can build a far more profitable business for yourself if you include a degree of that client is king, trusted advisor logic within your recurring process. That's really the crux of it. It's not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's just saying, look, let's not forget how that used to work, because there's, you know, agencies work like that for decades before the internet was a thing, you know, and we don't need to forget all that experience either.
Do you want some free resources to help you measure and improve your profitability? If you do, then I want to tell you about our agency profitability toolkit, which you can grab absolutely free in the show notes or by heading to paraketo.com/toolkit. It's packed with training videos, cheat sheets, templates, and all kinds of other great resources to help you start measuring and improving the essential metrics that are going to drive better profitability in your business. And it's helped thousands of other agencies around the world do the same. So I want to encourage you to go and grab a copy of that. And if you'd rather get in the fast lane and just have our team of experts guide you through the process of measuring and improving your profitability, then I want to encourage you to apply for a consultation at paraketo.com. And with that, I want to thank you again for tuning in. I hope you enjoy the episode and I'll let you get back to it. Yeah. Now let's pause and I want to talk about why. Why does this idea of introducing a little bit more of this strategic thinking into the client engagement create more profitability? Because I think the pushback that we might get on this set of ideas is, well, isn't the whole reason we move to productization and standardization to try and increase profitability? Isn't the whole reason we move to that to get away from time and materials or hourly based billing, which by and large is like how a large firm traditionally enabled that constant fluidity of scope? Was like, it didn't matter that the scope was changing all the time because they were just charging for their hours anyway. And then somehow we adopted this belief that it was impossible to be profitable or scalable using time materials, which kind of doesn't make any sense because like all the biggest firms on the planet are very profitable and huge and bill by the hour, but I digress, right? So I think that's the pushback that we're probably going to hear is like, well, how could I be more profitable with less standardization? Could you shed some light on kind of what your thesis is there?
So, yeah, okay. The first thing with this is that even if we are purely running a productized service, we should always be iterating on that product or service to make sure that it is the best it can be. And really, the only way you can do that is by stress testing it. So by not just by saying, okay, right, well, this is what we do and that's it, shut the doors off to everything else, but actually to look for ways that we can, as I say, the word I use is stress test, I suppose, but you know, we can push the boundaries of the product or the service that we do offer or services that we do offer is a good business practice anyway. That's just good business regardless of anything else. That's part one. Part two is that the easiest people to sell to are people that you've already sold to. Now, if you have a service and you have gone and found that cold client, you've done all the legwork, you've done all of the you know, the hard work of taking that cold lead, warming it up, sending it through a nurture funnel, having a discovery process, however your process works. You've done all that hard work and you've now got a customer, right? Brilliant. Fantastic. Well done. They are still the easiest person that you can sell to. You've done all the hard work of going through all of the weeds and the cold emails, the cold calls. You now have this person that trusts you enough to give you their money to, you know, for the services that you offer. Well, actually, it then makes logical sense to put some more effort into those clients to see where else you can support them. What extra value can you give? So that they can give you more money. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting we do any of this work for free. What I'm saying is that you have that the productized model cuts leads off when they become a customer, and actually customers are just better leads can be better leads to your business that then help you iterate on your process, produce better products or services of the stuff that you already do, which you can then try, you can then offer to new customers as a more holistic service that comes through. And the whole thing then becomes a more self-fulfilling kind of cycle.
Hmm. And so I think what you're touching on here are two dynamics that are very important in recurring revenue models. And they're talked about a lot in software as a service. They're not talked about as much in agencies, but I anticipate that they will as agencies get more sophisticated about really thinking of themselves as a recurring revenue model, which is retention of clients. That's number one. And yep. You know, I think the thesis here is that if we are seen as a strategic advisor to our clients and we are innovating and taking the lead on the strategy of solving this problem for them, it's less likely they're going to churn. So we'll hang on to them longer. And of course, part of what you talked about here, which is so important, I think, is constantly looking for opportunities to more deeply understand our customers' problem that we are solving for them, because those problems are not static. They tend to evolve over time, especially when we're talking about digital marketing. So our product is becoming more relevant or staying relevant as those needs fluctuate over time. And the second piece is expansion. And this is critically important when we're talking about growth, but also valuation, is when an investor or an acquirer looks at a business that has a heavy base of recurring revenue, they're going to pay attention to net revenue retention. And what they're looking for in a perfect world is positive net revenue retention, which means that every month, even if you never got another customer, your revenue would still grow because your monthly recurring revenue is growing through, to your point, the addition of additional scope, additional services, perhaps add-ons, perhaps partner services that you're collecting a commission on. So these two dynamics, if you sell recurring services, are super, super important to making them profitable, but also to maximizing the valuation of the business. So with that said, how does an agency think about going through this process of going from being an order taker selling a productized service to really being that strategic leader in the relationship?
So I want to say something. You're absolutely bang on. I couldn't have said it better myself. In fact, I didn't, which is why you said it, which is great. The one thing that I just like to add before we go on to that is you also, as the agency owner, you also have the ability to not offer additional scope to every client. So, you know, we all know that, and I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, but we all know that we have every agency basically has three types of clients. They have great clients, they have bad clients, and then they kind of have meh clients that sort of sit in the middle. If you have a client that, let's face it, you just don't get on with, or their business doesn't excite you, or, you know, they simply pay the bill every month and never ask any questions, I'm guessing they're not the great kind of clients. So what you actually have right now is the ability to take, just cherry pick the clients that you want to go further with, that you actually think you could add more value to, but are just people. You know, business is just people doing business with people. So these are the people that you really want to advance with, whether that's because of the size of their business or the just the human beings that they are or their location or their industry that they work in or whatever it might be. You get to set those parameters. So you can be a hell of a lot more fussy and picky and choosy with this because you're not simply trying to get people over a line. You are already working with them. Yeah. Where to get started
before we move on to the other question. Oh, sorry. Before we move on to the other question, I want to riff on this point a little bit because I think it's just so critically important. And even if the big idea here is that even if you see yourself as this pure productized service company, then you have a responsibility to do what is called product management. And mm-hmm. this is a very important practice if you build actual products like out of software. And if you're selling a productized services, then you also need to embrace this idea of product thinking. And product thinking has to do with constantly doing customer interviews and customer research and understanding problems so you can understand what are the features that need to be added, the changes to our product that need to be made so that it can stay relevant and stay at the bleeding edge of this problem space and be the best product for this problem. And I think that that's the thing that so many people get wrong when they think about productization and they think about niching down is they're thinking about it in terms of the features and benefits. But ultimately, that's all really stemming from a problem. That's the most important thing is what is the problem that you solve and what is the best way to solve it? And that is a process, not an event. And it reminds me of, you know, we had a member on our team at one point that was asking us as founders, like, when are we going to be done making changes to our process? And I said, never.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen. Like, you need to let go of the idea that somehow we're going to stop evolving how we do things because the problem isn't going to stop evolving. And so we need to evolve with it. And that is the practice of product management. And so I think it'd be easy for someone to interpret what's being said here on this podcast as like, oh, go back to selling everything to everyone. And that's not the point that's being made here. The point is the deeper we can understand the problem, the more opportunity to unlock value from that problem that we can create, which creates that strategic, that strategic entrenchment with the client. And it also creates a competitive moat because if we understand and solve the problem deeper than anyone else, then that becomes our competitive advantage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and everything we've said so far works for agencies that have one employee all the way through to a company that's the size of MailChimp and everybody in between, right? They might call it something different. They might have their own different processes for making this thing work, but it's applicable right throughout the board. This isn't a big business thing. This isn't a little business thing. It might just get labeled something else, depending on where you are. And you're dead right. Having that mindset of product management is a really great way of phrasing this. Absolutely. How you want to get started with this is kind of up to you. You know, I have the way I do this in my agency is so my agency really does two things. We build WordPress websites and Laravel applications, and then we market them through SEO. They're the two things that we do essentially. So the way that we do that is we get a whole load of leads for people that need WordPress websites. I mean, you know, we can't bat them away with a stick fast enough a lot of the time, but not all of those clients are going to be great fit for our SEO service. So we actually have two services and we use essentially this process to upsell certain clients from one to another. And because of that, we never ever go and sell SEO to a brand new client. I have this kind of theory that working with retained clients that you've never worked with before, unless you're running a product, if you're running a service I'm talking about, is a bit like getting married on the first date. So I would always put some kind of gated products in there in the way to make sure that everybody's happy with this before we get on. Maybe that's a sign of the size of the business I have rather than, you know, something that's a bit more a bit bigger or a bit more productized. But that's just the way that I decide to do it. But you've got to be able to look at what you offer and firstly, you've got to be objective with it and be able to see it through the client's eyes. And this is where that whole client is king thing, even if that's just a mentality that you bring into this, really helps. Be able to stand back from what you actually do and look at it through the client's perspective. And then from there say, okay, so what else does this client need? What, you know, where, what are the other touch points that our product or service can do or could do? Maybe with a slight tweak, maybe just with a different way of approaching it. But what else, what other value could we add with 20% of the work to get 80% of the gain? There's the 80-20 rule that we hear about all the time in all of this stuff, in order to make this more valuable to the customer. Now, if you're not comfortable doing that with yourself, I have some of my coaching clients. They cherry pick their client, the clients that they would like to work with, and send them like a feedback form or a questionnaire about how their business is going now that their project is 6 months old or 8 months old or however old it might be. And they actually engage the client with a kind of process of constructive feedback before, which then leads on to a, hey, well, we can help you with that. And off we go. And this is what we have. And of course, after you've done this a few times, normally one of two things happens. You either start to modify your initial process so that how did potentially start as an open quotes new thing actually just becomes part of the process. Your process or product or service just gets that little bit bigger to accommodate it. Or if it doesn't fit quite as neatly like that, well, then you just simply start up a second process or service. That's exactly what I did with, you know, we offer web design and development and we offer SEO services. There's the two things. Very complementary, and it's not that big a leap to get certain clients from one to the other.
Yeah. Now, there's a trap in here that people will run into when they start doing this. And even if they don't start doing this, which is the client says, hey, can you do this for me? They start asking you specifically mm-hmm. for a thing that they think that they want or that they think that they need. And this yep. is a trap. I want to let everybody know this is a trap. Henry Ford said it best. If I gave my customers what they asked for, I would have built a faster horse. And this, when we're talking about product and when we're talking about this, right? This is such an important insight, is we have to have the mindfulness to stop a client when they ask for something and look past the ask to understand their problem.
Yeah.
Why is that important to you? What problem are you trying to solve with this? Tell me more about that. Because if we can understand the problem, that's our opportunity, I think, to become that strategic lead where we go, you know, I know this is one of the ways in which you see yourself solving that problem, but in my experience, that might not get you the best result because what I'm hearing is X, Y, and Z. And what we've seen work better is this other process. Is that something that you'd be open to? And when you can teach them about how to understand and resolve their problem in a way that is better than what they can do, that puts more control in your lane as the person developing the product or the service. It helps you stay out of the order taker seat, and it really creates that amazing strategic buy-in. But that is a trap. Just starting to get these requests and taking those at face value is such a trap, and it takes a lot of consciousness to push past that and understand the problem.
It really does. It really does. And, you know, ultimately, the goal of all of this is to provide your clients with the value that they need rather than the value that they want. And when you hit that you know, I love that quote from Henry Ford. That's brilliant. But that's the goal with this, is to identify the needs of your clients, so that you can modify your process. As I say, start up a second process, whatever, however that works in your business, but so that you can have that, you become that authority, you become that trusted go-to person. Because the more of the needs you tick off for your clients, the even more loyal they will be to you for years to come.
And so before we close on this, the traditional name for what we just described, I think, is account management. Like, I think in a big traditional firm, the person who is going out, asking the client how they're doing, getting an understanding of what their needs are, understanding what problems they have, and then working internally to figure out, okay, what can we do to capture some of this value? That would typically be a highly skilled account manager. Is that right?
And typically, yeah.
So the body of knowledge around this then is probably like, if you start Googling account management, start reading books on account management, you'll probably start to learn some of the best practices that have been around for a long time about how to do this. And if you're a productized service company, this is called product management. And there's it's still a much newer discipline than account management, but there'd be a lot of useful tools there for you to look into. So I'll leave some resources in the show notes for that. Pete, where should people go in the show notes to learn more about you and consume more of the content that you're creating?
So the places that you can find me, the easiest place to go is probably PeteEverett.com, which is currently just a holding page while I'm rejigging a few things. But it does have links off to my main social channels and to my podcasts, Retain FM and the WP SEO show. So yeah, head over to PeteEverett.com and it will just send you to the places that you can find me.
Excellent. We will have a link to that in the show notes. Pete, before we wrap up, any final words of advice for our listeners that want to grow their recurring revenue?
Well, you know, the one thing I would say is recurring revenue is... if you're not running recurring revenue in your business right now, it can seem like a complete uphill struggle. It can seem like you've got a mountain to climb and you're never going to climb it. But actually, the joy of running recurring services is actually having that lasting relationship with your clients. So like we've just been talking about, go figure out how you can potentially start to talk to your best clients, the people that you like working with the best, and just start from there. Just take it one step at a time. It's just like anything else.
Sound advice. With that, Pete, I want to thank you for making time for being on the show here. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in as well. It's been a real pleasure.
Cheers, Marcel. Thanks for having me. And it's been
great. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you've ever found yourself thinking, man, I get so much value from this podcast, I wish there was something I could do to return the favor. Well, today's your lucky day because you can leave us a review wherever you're listening to this. And it is incredibly helpful. Of course, if you haven't grabbed a free copy of the Agency Profit Toolkit, go and get that. It's got tons of free resources to help you improve your profitability. If you're looking to get in the fast lane and get help from experts to improve your profitability and measure your most important metrics, then apply for a consultation at Parakeeto.com. We'd love to chat with you and figure out how we can help. With all of that, thank you so much for being a listener, and we will see you on the next episode.
speak to you again.